Chapter 30. It's time. It's time. You know, Margarita was saying, just after you fell asleep last night, I was reading about the darkness that descended from the Mediterranean Sea. And those idols, oh, the golden idols, I just can't stop thinking about them for some reason. I think it's about to rain now as well. Can you feel the air grow cooler? This is all well and good, replied the master, smoking a cigarette and breaking up the smoke with his hand. And the idols too, God be with them. But I have absolutely no idea what will happen to us next. This conversation took place at sunset, just as Matthew Levi appeared before Volant on the terrace. The basement window was open, and anyone who peeked in would have been surprised at how strange the people inside looked. Margarita was wearing her black coat directly over her bare skin, and the master was dressed in his hospital gown. This was because Margarita had absolutely nothing to wear, since all of her things were back at the mansion, and even though the place was close by, returning there to reclaim her clothing was out of the question. As for the master, they found all his attire in the closet, as if he had never left. He simply did not wish to get dressed, aiming to emphasize to Margarita the ridiculousness of their situation. He was, however, cleanly shaven for the first time since that autumn night. In the clinic, they only clipped his beard. The room looked very strange as well, and it was difficult to sort anything out in the chaos. Manuscripts littered the rug and the couch. A book was sticking out of an armchair, spine upwards. Dinner was served on the round table, with several bottles standing among the hors d'oeuvres. The master and Margarita did not know where the food and drink had come from. They found it already on the table when they woke up. The master and his companion had slept right until sunset on Saturday. They woke up fully replenished, with only one side effect remaining from yesterday's adventures. Both were experiencing a dull pain in their left temples. Their mental state changed considerably, however, as anyone eavesdropping on their conversation would have been able to ascertain. There was positively no one around to eavesdrop, though. One of the best features of the little courtyard was that it was always deserted. Every day, the spring scent from the greening willows and lindens outside became stronger, and a light breeze was already fanning it into the basement. "Oh, the devil!" the master suddenly exclaimed. "Just think about it," he said, extinguishing the butt of his cigarette in the ashtray and clutching his head with both hands. "Just listen. You are an intelligent person, and you were never insane. Are you seriously telling me that yesterday we were at Satan's?" "Absolutely," Margarita replied. "Right, right," the master noted with irony. "It seems one madman has turned to two, husband and wife." He raised his arms to the sky and shouted, "The devil knows what this is! The devil, the devil, the devil!" Instead of answering, Margarita collapsed on the couch in a fit of laughter, waving her bare legs in the air, and then exclaimed, I can't help it. I can't. Just look at yourself. After the master, in embarrassment, adjusted his hospital long johns and she finished laughing, Margarita grew serious. You unwittingly spoke the truth just now, she said. The devil knows, and believe me, the devil will arrange everything. Her eyes flashed, and she jumped up and started to dance on the spot, shouting, How happy I am! How happy! How happy that I made a deal with him! Oh, the devil! The devil! Sounds like you'll have to live with a witch, my dear. She dashed to the master, clasped him round the neck, and began to kiss his lips, his nose, his cheeks. Strands of her unkempt black hair danced over the master, and his cheeks and forehead burned with kisses. You really do look like a witch, you know. I don't deny it, Margarita replied. I am a witch, and I like it. Oh, all right, said the master. A witch, then. All well and good. I've been abducted from the hospital. Also very nice. Taken here, let's say, and... Look, even if they don't bother looking for us, tell me, in the name of all that's holy, how are we going to live? Believe me, I say this because I care about you. Just then, two blunt-toed boots and the lower end of a pair of pinstriped trousers appeared in the window. The trousers bent at the knee, and someone's heavy behind blocked the light.
"You home, Aloysius?"
a voice asked from above the trousers on the other side of the window.
"Here we go," said the master.
"Aloysius?" Margarita asked, moving to the window. "He was arrested yesterday. Who wants to know? What's your name?" The knees disappeared instantly along with the behind. The gate clanged, and everything returned to normal. Margarita fell on the couch and laughed until tears poured from her eyes. When she quieted down, her face changed dramatically. She began to speak seriously and climbed down from the couch as she spoke, crept over to the master's knees, and began to caress his head as she gazed into his eyes.
"How you must have suffered, my poor darling. I alone know. Look at the grey hairs on your head, at the permanent lines by your lips. You've had to think too much, and now I shall think for you. And I promise that everything will go spectacularly well."
"I'm not afraid of anything, Margot," the master said suddenly and raised his head, looking just as he looked when he wrote of things he had never seen and yet knew they had happened. "I am not afraid because I have already endured it all. They tried to frighten me too much, and now they can frighten me no more. But I pity you, Margot. That's the problem. And that's why I keep repeating the same thing over and over. Come to your senses. Why ruin your life with a sick, impoverished man? Go back. I say it because I pity you."
"Oh, you," Margarita whispered, shaking her tousled head. "Oh, you unfortunate man of little faith. I spent an entire night trembling and naked for you. I shed my very nature and replaced it with another. I sat in a dark closet for months and cried my eyes out, thinking of only one thing. The storm over Yerushalayim. And now, when happiness has fallen in our lap, you would chase me away."
"I will leave then. But know that you are a cruel man. They have drained your soul." A bitter tenderness filled the master's heart, and he started crying in Margarita's hair. She cried too, and whispered to him, her fingers playing over his temples.
All those threads. Your head is turning white as snow before my eyes, your poor long-suffering head. Look at your eyes. I see the desert in them. Your shoulders burdened. They've crippled you. Crippled you."
Margarita's words became incoherent as she shuddered with tears. Then the master wiped his tears, lifted Margarita from her knees, rose himself, and said firmly,
"Enough. You've made me ashamed. You may rest easy knowing I will never give in to weakness and raise this question again. I know we both suffer from this mental illness, which I may have passed to you. Very well, then. Together we shall carry it."
Margarita brought her lips close to the master's ear and whispered,
"I swear on my life, swear by the son of the astrologer king whose story you've uncovered, that all will be well."
"All right, then," the master replied. Laughing, he added, "Of course, people are bound to seek aid from the supernatural when they've been as completely robbed as we have. So be it.
I agree to seek it too." "Now you are back, you are laughing," Margarita replied.
"And to hell with your long words. Who cares if it's supernatural or not?
I'm hungry."
And she dragged the master by the arm to the table.
"I'm still not sure this meal won't suddenly fall through the ground or fly out of the window," said the master, now completely calm.
"It won't."
And at the same moment, they heard a nasal voice at the window.
"Peace be with you!"
The master flinched, but Margarita was already used to the incredible and shouted,
"Why, it's Azazello! Oh, how sweet,
how nice!" she whispered to the master. "You see, they didn't forget us.
and ran to open the door.
"Cover yourself, at least," the master shouted after her.
"I couldn't care less,"
Margarita called back from the tiny hallway. And soon Azazello was bowing, saying hello to the master, and flashing his crooked eye, while Margarita was exclaiming,
"Oh, I'm so glad! I've never been so glad in all my life! But forgive me for being naked, Azazello."
Azazello begged her not to worry, assuring her that he had not only seen his share of naked women, but also women who had been skinned entirely. He sidled up eagerly to the table, after placing some package wrapped in dark brocade in a corner by the furnace. Margarita poured Azazello some cognac, and he gladly drank it. Without taking his eyes off Azazello, the master would occasionally pinch his left hand under the table. But the pinching did not help. Azazello did not vanish into thin air, nor, frankly, was there any reason for him to do so. There was nothing scary about the short, red-haired man, except perhaps his wall eye, which did not require any magical explanations, and his clothing, some sort of cassock or cloak, which was not that extraordinary either, come to think of it. He deftly drank his cognac, like any good man, by the glass and without diluting it with food. The master's own head began to buzz from the cognac, and he thought, "No, Margarita is right. Of course it's a messenger of the devil sitting before me. Why, only the night before yesterday, I was convincing Ivan that it was Satan he had met at Patriarch's Ponds, and today I somehow became frightened of the thought and started carrying on about hypnosis and hallucinations. What the hell does hypnosis have to do with it?" He looked closely at Azazello and saw a sort of tension in his eyes, some hitherto unrevealed thought. "He's not just visiting. He's here on business," thought the master. His powers of observation served him well. Finishing his third shot of cognac, which had absolutely no effect on him, the visitor spoke thus.
"Hell, it's a cosy little basement you have here. I wonder, though, what are you going to do here in this basement?"
"That's exactly what I'm asking," the master replied, laughing.
"Why do you worry me, Azazello?" Margarita asked. "We'll make it somehow."
"Please, please," Azazello cried. "I wouldn't even think of worrying you. I fully agree. Somehow. Oh, yes, I almost forgot. Messiah sends his regards and invites you to join him for a quick ride, if you so choose. What do you say?"
Margarita nudged the master under the table with her leg.
"With great pleasure," the master replied, studying Azazello, who continued,
"We hope Margarita Nikolaevna will not refuse either."
"I certainly won't," said Margarita, and again her leg brushed against the master's.
"Wonderful!" Azazello exclaimed. "Now, this I like. One, two, ready to go. Not like back in the Alexandrovsky Gardens."
"Oh, don't remind me, Azazello. I was a fool then. Though, can you really blame me? It's not every day that you run into evil spirits."
"You sure don't," Azazello confirmed. "If you did, it would be very nice."
"I like the speed, too," Margarita spoke excitedly. "The speed and the nakedness. Like a Mauser. Bang! And how he shoots," Margarita exclaimed, turning to the master. "A seven under the pillow and any pip." Margarita was getting drunk, and her eyes were on fire.
"And again, I almost forgot,"
Azazello exclaimed, slapping his forehead.
"Forgive me, I'm exhausted. Messiah has sent you a gift," he said, speaking to the master. "A bottle of wine. Note that it is the same wine the Procurator of Judea drank, Falernian wine."
Quite naturally, such a rarity fascinated Margarita and the master. Azazello unwrapped a very mouldy jug from a piece of dark burial brocade. They sniffed the wine, poured it into glasses, and held it up to the light in the window as it faded before the storm. The wine turned everything a bloody colour.
"Volant's health!" Margarita exclaimed, raising her glass. All three took a large gulp from their glasses. Immediately, the last of the light began to dim in the master's eyes. He felt short of breath and knew that the end was near.
he saw a deathly pale Margarita stretch her arms out to him helplessly before dropping her head on the table and sliding to the floor.
Poisoner!
The master had time to scream. He wanted to grab a knife from the table to strike Azazello, but his hands slipped helplessly from the tablecloth, and then everything in the basement turned black and disappeared. The master fell over backwards, splitting the skin on his temple on the edge of the desk as he fell. When the poisoned victims fell silent, Azazello sprang into action. First, he dashed out through the window, and a few moments later appeared at Margarita Nikolaevna's mansion. Ever precise and careful, Azazello wanted to make sure that everything had been carried out properly. Indeed, everything was in order. Azazello saw a grim-faced woman awaiting her husband's return leave her bedroom. Suddenly, she turned pale, clutched her heart, and cried helplessly.
Natasha! Somebody! Over here!
She fell on the floor in the living room, never reaching the study.
Everything's in order? Said Azazello.
A moment later, he was back at the fallen lover's side. Margarita was laying face down on the rug. With his iron hands, Azazello turned her over like a doll and peered into the poisoned woman's face. It was changing before his eyes. Even in the stormy twilight, it was possible to see that her temporary witch-like squint was disappearing, along with her recently acquired look of cruelty and violence. The face of the deceased grew softer and lighter, and her savage grin turned into a simple expression of suffering. Azazello squeezed apart her white teeth and poured in several drops of the same wine he used to poison her. Margarita sighed and rose without Azazello's help. She sat down and asked weakly,
"Why, Azazello, why? What have you done to me?"
Seeing the master lying on the floor, she shuddered and whispered,
"This I did not expect. Murderer."
"No, no," Azazello replied. "He will rise in a moment. Why must you be so nervous?"
The red-haired demon's voice was so persuasive that Margarita believed him at once. She jumped up, strong and full of life, and helped him give the prone man some wine. Opening his eyes, the master glared grimly and hatefully repeated his last word.
"Poisoner." "Ah, yes, an insult is my usual reward for a job well done," Azazello replied. "Are you blind? Come, see the light."
The master rose and looked around with lively, lucid eyes.
"What is this new thing?" he asked.
"It means," Azazello replied, "that it's time to go. Can you hear the storm rumbling? It grows dark. The horses are pawing the ground. The little garden shakes. Say goodbye to the basement. Say it quickly."
"Ah, I understand," said the master, glancing round. "You have killed us. We are dead. How clever, how timely. Now I understand."
"Oh, please," Azazello replied. "Is it you I hear? How can you be dead when your friend here calls you a master, when you can think? Is it really necessary to be able to sit in a basement wearing hospital underwear to be considered alive? It's ridiculous."
"I understood all that you said," the master exclaimed.
"Say no more. You are 1,000 times right."
"Great Volant," Margarita echoed. "Great Volant. He thought up a far better solution than I." "But the novel," she shouted to the master. "Take the novel with you, no matter where you go."
"There's no need," the master replied. "I know it by heart."
"And you won't forget a word, not a single word?"
Margarita asked, pressing against her lover and wiping away the blood from his injured temple. "Fear not, I will never forget anything anymore," he replied.
"In that case, fire!" cried Azazello. "It is fire that started it all, and fire that we use to end it all."
"Fire!"
Margarita cried fearsomely. The basement window banged as the wind blew aside the curtains. A short, merry thunderclap shook the sky. Azazello thrust his clawed hand into the furnace, pulled out a charred log, and set fire to the tablecloth. Then he ignited a stack of old newspapers on the couch, then the manuscripts, then the curtain on the window. Intoxicated by the impending ride, the master picked up some book from the shelf, threw it on the table, and ruffled its pages. It burst into happy flames. "Burn, old life, burn! Burn suffering!" cried Margarita. Crimson pillars of fire were already weaving about the room. In a cloud of smoke, all three ran out of the door, climbed up the stone steps, and found themselves in the courtyard. The first thing they saw there was the landlord's cook, sitting on the ground amid scattered potatoes and bunches of onions. Her condition was understandable. Three black stallions stood by the shed, snorting, quivering, and kicking up fountains of dirt. Margarita mounted hers first, then Azazello, and finally the master. Moaning, the cook raised her hand to make the sign of the cross, but Azazello shouted menacingly from the saddle. "I'll cut off that hand!" He whistled, and the horses soared into the air, broke through the linden branches, and plunged into a low black cloud. Immediately, smoke appeared from the basement window. The cook's weak, pitiful voice came from below. "Fire!" The horses were already flying over the roofs of Moscow. "I want to bid farewell to the city," the master shouted to Azazello, who was riding in front. Thunder drowned out the end of the master's sentence. Azazello nodded and sent his horse into a gallop. Ahead, the storm cloud rushed swiftly towards the riders, but the rain had not yet begun. They flew over the boulevard, watching as the tiny figures below scattered, seeking shelter from the rain. The first drops fell. They flew over a pillar of smoke, all that remained of Griboyedov. They flew over the rapidly darkening city as lightning flashed above. The roofs gave way to greenery. Then the downpour came and turned the riders into three giant bubbles in a wall of water. Margarita had already experienced flight, but the master had not. He was surprised at how quickly they reached their destination, the only man he wanted to say goodbye to, as he had no one else. Through the veil of rain, he immediately recognized Stravinsky's clinic, the river, and the pine wood he had spent so much time studying. They alighted in a grove clearing not far from the clinic. "I will wait for you here," Azazello shouted, cupping his hands to his mouth, now lit up by lightning, now disappearing in the grey haze. "Say your farewells, but quickly." The master and Margarita dismounted and flew through the clinic's garden, flickering like two watery shadows. A moment later, the master was opening the grating on the windows of room number 117 with a habitual motion. Margarita followed him inside. They approached Ivan, unseen and unnoticed in the rumbling and howling of the storm. The master stopped by the bed. Ivan lay there motionless, just as he had when he first witnessed a storm in his new place of rest. This time, however, he was not crying. When he looked closer at the dark silhouette that had burst in from the balcony, he rose, stretched out his arms, and said happily, "Ah, it's you. I've been waiting and waiting for you. Here you are at last, my neighbour." "I am here," the master said to that, "but unfortunately I can be your neighbour no more. I am leaving forever and have come here to say goodbye." "I knew it. I had guessed," Ivan said quietly and asked, "So you met him?" "Yes," said the master. "I came to say goodbye to you because you are the only man I have spoken to recently." Ivan brightened up and said, "It's good that you came. I'll keep my word, you know, no more poetry. I'm interested in something else now." Ivan smiled and looked past the master with crazed eyes. "There's something else I want to write. I've figured out quite a few things while I've been lying here, you know." The master became excited at these words. He sat down on the edge of Ivan's bed and said, "That's good. That's good. You'll write the rest of his story." Ivan's eyes flashed.
But won't you do it yourself?
He hung his head and added thoughtfully,
Oh, yes, what am I saying?
Ivan stared fearfully at the floor. Yes, said the master, and his voice sounded hollow and unfamiliar to Ivan.
I won't write about him any more. I'll be busy with other things.
A distant whistle cut through the noise of the storm. Did you hear? Asked the master.
The storm, yes.
No, I am being called.
It's time to go, the master explained and rose from the bed. Wait, one more thing,
asked Ivan.
Did you find her? Did she stay faithful to you?
She is here, the master said, and pointed at the wall. Margarita's dark shape separated from the white wall, and she approached the bed, gazing sorrowfully at the prone young man.
Poor boy,
she whispered noiselessly, and bent down to the bed.
So beautiful,
Ivan said, without envy, but sadly and with a sort of quiet tenderness.
See how well everything turned out for you. Not so much for me, though.
He thought a while and added pensively,
Then again, maybe it will. It will. It will,
Margarita whispered, leaning even closer.
Let me give you a kiss on the forehead, and all will be well.
Trust me, I have seen it all, and I know. The young man clasped her round the neck, and she kissed him.
Farewell, disciple,
the master said barely audibly, and began to dissolve in the air along with Margarita. The window grating closed. Ivan grew anxious. He sat up on the bed, looked round in alarm, and even moaned a little. He began talking to himself and finally stood up. Evidently, the increasingly violent storm was troubling his soul. He was also troubled by the fact that his ears, already used to the constant quiet, had detected uneasy steps and muffled voices outside his door. Shaking nervously, he called out,
Praskovya Fyodorovna!
Praskovya Fyodorovna came in right away and gave Ivan a questioning, alarmed look. What? What's the matter? She asked. Is the storm bothering you? It's okay, it's okay. We'll help you. I'll call the doctor.
No, Praskovya Fyodorovna, there's no need,
said Ivan, looking anxiously at the wall and not at Praskovya Fyodorovna.
There's nothing really wrong with me. I can figure it out now, don't you worry.
Tell me, though,
Ivan said confidentially,
what just happened in the next door room, 118?
18, Praskovya Fyodorovna repeated, her eyes darting. Nothing much. But Ivan immediately caught the falseness in her voice and said,
Oh, Praskovya Fyodorovna, you are such a truthful person. You think I'll get violent? It won't happen, Praskovya Fyodorovna. Just tell me the truth. I can sense it through the wall anyway.
Your neighbour just passed away,
Praskovya Fyodorovna whispered, unable to overcome her natural truthfulness and kindness. Engulfed in a sudden flash of lightning, she looked fearfully at Ivan. But nothing awful happened to the young man. He only raised his finger meaningfully and said,
I knew it. I assure you, Praskovya Fyodorovna, that another person has just passed away in the city. I even know who.
Ivan smiled mysteriously.
A woman.